And we back. Hey, this ain't no intro, it's the entree. Hit that intro with Kanye, I sound like Andre. Tryna turn my baby mama to my fiance. She like music, she from Houston, like Auntie Beyonce.
Man, my daughter couldn't have a better mother. If she ever find another, he better love her. Man, I swear my life is perfect. I can merge it. If I die, I'll probably cry.
All we got, Chance the Rapper. Good way to intro my guest coming up here right now. Mr. Joshua Harris, Green Party candidate for mayor of the city of Baltimore. Joshua, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. I'm a fan of Chance.
I figured that was true.
Yeah.
So 410-319-8888 is the number here to talk to Joshua Harris. Your ideas and thoughts for him as he makes these last few days effort to become the next mayor of Baltimore City. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, jump on our Facebook pages, send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. Talk@steinershow.org or do call in. 410-319-8888 is the number. So you've been making the rounds this morning. So good good to have you here.
I have. It's getting close to election day.
It is. So tell me how you're feeling.
I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling really good. We spent every day at early voting at the polls, and a lot of people are excited and have been coming out to vote and support. And so, yeah, I'm excited. I thrive off of that energy in my campaign. Has been powered by people.
So you got your green tie on too. Your green tie.
Got my green tie.
It's a Green Party tie. So, a political question. I'm gonna get into some brass tacks. So, we had Sheila Dixon on the show here a couple weeks back when she announced that she was going to be a write-in candidate, official write-in candidate. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to that? And how do you think that could? Some people might think it might negatively affect your campaign.
Well, I had a conversation with her after the primary, and so she did tell me that she was considering running as a write-in. And she said that she didn't know when she would make that decision. So I was aware that it was a possibility. And it's her decision. I mean, it's I totally understand. As an athlete my entire life, I know that the hardest decision you will ever make in your life, no matter what, is knowing when to try harder and when to walk away. And so that's just a decision each individual has to make. I experienced it with sports. I've experienced it in other things. But it's a decision that we all have to come to, and we all have to make that decision. And so she chose to run as a write-in candidate. And that doesn't change my method or my strategy. I'm knocking on doors, and I'm touching voters directly. And I'm at 9,062 doors now as of last night that I've personally knocked on. And we're getting the message out there.
You'll be knocking all weekend long, I take it.
All weekend long. Letting folks know they have an option. And you'd be surprised. I've knocked on all these doors, and no other mayoral candidate has knocked on any of them. I'm the only one. Yeah, we started on this race with 29 people, and I'm the only candidate for mayor to knock on many of these doors, which I found very interesting.
So, question number one, and folks, do join it. Come on, 410-319-8888. So many of you call in and say, I'm voting for Josh Harris, or I'm trying to figure out who I am voting for. So call now and ask them the questions you want for the half an hour we have together here at 410-319-8888 or talk@steinershow.org by email, or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner. But do come on now, 410-319-8888. Marilyn Mosby came out the other week with some pretty powerful suggestions, some people might say, on how to reform the process of looking at police who have been accused of brutality, and how to change the criminal justice system. And there are a lot of folks who are out for her head as well out here. That's very clear. So what are your thoughts on what she proposed? How does that fit into your vision of what you want to do in a Harris administration?
I think that what the state's attorney proposed is a great start. I don't agree with all of it.
What don't you agree with?
I think that what it does is that it disregards the fact that it can't just be the state's attorney's office that does this. We have to work in conjunction with the police department, with the mayor's office, and with the state of Maryland in order to get anything accomplished. It's not just all in our plate. And understand this is a team sport. And so we're all in this together. And so there should have been, in my opinion, a meeting of the minds to come together on all those levels to say, hey, this is what we look to see, and have input and put together a comprehensive long-term sustainability plan to see what can be done, even if it's just in theory. We know how difficult it is to get actual legislation passed, but to sit down and say, yes, we agree with this, like what Ray Kelly and No Boundaries have been doing. They've been going around and they're proposing the People's Decree. Unfortunately, my opponent, Catherine Pugh, has not signed off in support of that for community policing. But all the other candidates for mayor
The three of you, the Republican, the Green Party candidate, and the writing candidate, Sheila Dixon, all have signed that.
Yes, yes. Because
what is that?
It's just it are recommendations for increasing community police relations and to begin to have the community more involved in policing. And all recommendations that were come to the conclusion of after years of gathering information and stories before the Department of Justice began their report. In fact, the Department of Justice included in there many of the stories that came from No Boundaries report. And so it's recommendations from the people and from actually folks who went out and talked to everyday Baltimoreans who had these experiences daily to see how we can better bridge that divide between the community and police. And these are the types of things that we have to see, not just someone who says, oh, I'm really smart. I have this position and I'm going to say that this is probably what we should do, but actually hearing from folks on the ground who are living this every single day. And so that's what Ray Kelly and the folks at No Boundaries did. And I think it's a great start, and that's why I signed on to support it, because we have to begin to bring the community into the process. And again, my entire campaign has been about shifting power and decision-making process away from the bureaucracy of City Hall and corporate interests and into the hands of people in neighborhoods that are impacted most and need those resources the most.
Let me ask some direct questions about that before I ask you political questions about you and this race and where you think it might go. But there are people who posit, I have on the air here, that maybe one of the things we need to look at is taking money out of the police budget and putting it into other sectors of the city. You have the health department, where only the city gets $25 million to them a year. They have to raise every other dime from grants, federal and state and private foundations to do their work. People are saying maybe we should invest money into safe streets as the first responders and Women from Out for Justice, Power Inside, who can do the kind of work in the community for healing and stopping violence. Maybe the money could be better spent elsewhere and reorganize what the police actually do. I mean, what are your? That to me would be one of the key things any mayor will do. So what would be your proposal? If not that, what is your proposal?
Absolutely. We have to. We have to begin to redistribute capital and understanding that policing in itself, well, our police budget, first of all, is larger than our health budget, our housing budget, our education budget.
And recreation.
Combined.
Right.
And recreation combined.
Right.
And so where you put your money at is what you value. And so we are clearly valuing these reactive measures. Policing in itself is reactionary. And so if we want to begin to be proactive, we have to invest in the front end. And so that means taking money away from policing and put it into education, taking money away from policing and put it into parks and recs so that we can focus on creating healthy, sustainable young people so that they're not ending up in the situation or in the school to prison pipeline or ending up in situations with police or having to encounter police. And so reallocating our budget is something that has to happen. And I'm not afraid to say that. When you mentioned Safe Streets as well, Safe Streets is a program that has statistically been proven more effective than policing itself.
It almost closed.
Yeah.
It almost closed this year.
And in fact, that their budget is included in the public health budget, which comes from the state level. And my opponent, who's a state senator, hasn't said anything about that or advocated on behalf of that. I've had meetings with folks who were so disappointed with the fact that that budget was being removed. And in reality, when it should be included in the policing budget, but yet it's in the health budget. And so making sure that we are putting money where we value and what has been proven to be most effective to create healthy, sustainable communities. And we know that over-policing, hyper-policing, and militarized policing does not yield the results necessary for long-term stability in communities and in cities.
410-319-8888. Joshua Harris is here in the house. Till the top of the hour to take your questions and your thoughts as he makes the last several days of campaigning before Tuesday's vote for the next mayor of Baltimore, 410-319-8888. And you can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, email us to talk@steinershow.org. Let's say, for argument's sake, you don't win the race. You started out as a Democrat, you became a Green. What would be next for Joshua Harris because we do live in a Democratic town where I can't remember. The last Republican to win was probably Theodore McKeldin, which was way before you and most people in Baltimore were even born.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen if the Democrats prevail, which they usually do?
For me, there's still work to be done. and there's work that I'm committed to. I'm committed to the city. This is a city that I love. This is a city where my fiance and I have decided to make home and start our family at.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you so much. And every day, there's going to be work to be done. And so whether that work is on the ground level in the community or making sure that I'm in the boardrooms where these decision-making processes occur to make sure that the community is receiving resources necessary, there is work to be done. And I'm committed to continuing to do that work beyond this campaign. Even when you talk about job creation, I flew halfway across the world to visit Masdar in the United Arab Emirates, which is the world's first sustainably green city built from the ground up, to talk to them about their manufacturing and production of clean energy, to see how we can bring it here to Baltimore City. And I did that before I was running for mayor. So we're looking at bringing in investors and manufacturers and distributors into Baltimore to create jobs and put Baltimoreans to work, no matter what the outcome of this election is. Is it much more effective and easier to do or to accomplish when it's from the seat of the mayor's office? Absolutely, when you have the city that buys into it. But regardless of whether I get the seat, there's work that I'm going to be doing. I promised my grandmother I wouldn't waste my youth, and I'm not. So I'm going to be out here pounding the pavement and making sure that people have power and a voice that can be heard and can be felt in City Hall.
So let me get this. There's a tweet coming in. Let's read this tweet. The first tweet came in here at Mark Steiner, and also 410-319-8888 for your calls. But at Mark Steiner, the tweet is from Melissa Schober, who tweeted about, can you ask Harris about participatory budgeting and his thoughts on ceasefire and the continuity of justice programs?
Okay. So thank you, Melissa, for the question. I appreciate it. And so participatory budgeting is something that is in my platform, and I'm excited to say that Strong City and other organizations are beginning to show interest in it, particularly interested in piloting it with the youth set-aside, should it be approved as a ballot measure this November on Tuesday, if the citizens decide to vote to set that percentage of the budget aside for youth programs. We're interested in seeing the young people come together and community members vote on how that money should be used versus someone in City Hall who's never been to a community or never been to a particular neighborhood saying, this is what we're going to give you and this is what we're going to use that money for. We need to begin to have people have a voice and a say in how their communities are developed. And participatory budgeting has been proven to do just that. And not only has it been proven to do that, but what it does is it gets more people engaged civically, because when they feel like they have a voice and they have a say in how their tax dollars are being used, they're more inclined to want to participate in the voting process. Whether you talk about people who are working two and three jobs sometimes, or whether you talk about illegal immigrants who are still working and paying into the system but don't really have a say through a vote, per se, they can have a say in how their communities are developed by coming together with other community members to say, well, this is what we like to see. We like to see this recreation center open and funded, or we like to see this grocery store put here, and so, or we like to see that these after school art programs are put here, and we like to use the money from the budget and voting on those processes or those proposals, and let the community decide versus someone in City Hall. And so we've seen great strides with participatory budgeting all over the world, effective in increasing civic engagement. And so that's really what this is about, having people really understand that it is your dollars and your voice should be heard, and you should have a say in how your communities are developed. And participatory budgeting is great at doing just that. And so it's been in my platform for quite some time. I sat down in a meeting months ago with Strong City after they read it, and they were interested in finding out more about participatory budgeting, and have taken a lead to work with the city council president on doing that for youth projects and piloting it. And so that's something that I'm committed to. And the other half of the question was about ceasefire, or what was it?
And his thoughts on ceasefire and the continuity of justice programs.
I think that, again, this comes back to it directly related to programs like Safe Streets, knowing that we have to begin to let people who are in the community really begin to help police our communities. And they understand how to navigate the cultural components of it best. They understand who the people are. They're on the ground every single day. And so we should be putting funding into allowing folks of the community to be paid to be involved and engaged in policing their communities and ensuring that their communities are safe. And so those are definitely programs we have to be able to begin to fund and support. And so again, I'm not naive. Everyone says, well, if you fund this, you have to cut something here or you have to increase taxes, which is what conventional wisdom tells you. But again, coming back to my economic development plan, which specifically gives us the ability to leverage the budget we have to create more wealth in the city to make those investments and improvements without cutting budgets other places and without increasing property taxes.
Let's talk about development for a moment. Folks, do join. There we go. We get these calls coming in, 410-319-8888. We'll get to you in just a minute. Marvin, throw this question out as you get ready to come on the air with us. What about development? I mean, there's been one of the big issues here. We've seen what happened with Port Covington. The questions of how the what's the role of equity in development from here on in Baltimore, which is a huge issue that no candidate I've really heard addressed. Maybe you have, but I haven't heard candidates address this issue. And also the idea that if a development project has city funds especially, and it does nothing to ameliorate the conditions and change the conditions of the poor working people in the city that may be the majority of the city, then is it worth doing? So, I mean, what are your ideas about development?
So, one, I don't like reinventing the wheel. The White House recently released its community development model and report that offers recommendations for successful, sustainable community development. Unfortunately, in Baltimore City, what we've seen is that we violated almost all of those recommendations, and we take a business-first development model approach. Which means that we take these businesses, whether it be Under Armour, Sagamore, BG&E, or Exelon, and we say we value and we appreciate you and more than we appreciate our citizens, and we also trust you more than we appreciate our citizens, or the fact that our citizens will be able to find the expertise to actually participate, or that they already have the expertise to participate in these development negotiations. And so we're going to give the business, we're going to give you everything that you want. And whatever you decide to give the community, well, that's what the community gets. Even though it's public dollars that we're giving you, whatever you decide to give the public, that's what they'll get. And that's a business-first development model, and that is not sustainable. We have to begin to put the community at the center of how we develop our city. Otherwise, we will only further perpetuate hyper-segregation. We'll only further perpetuate the wealth disparity and the education gap in our city. We have to begin to put people at the center of how we develop and allow people to participate in that process. When you look at something like... any one of the TIFs that have been given out recently, when you look at Port Covington, Harbor Point, University of Maryland Biopark, the community was not substantively involved or at the forefront of those projects and even the community community benefits agreements that were sealed. Because if we're talking about empowering the community, we want to look at long-term stability, long-term opportunity and equity in raising the median family household income, which means investing in people first, which means investing in training your citizenship before you begin the project and give $660 million away to a billionaire, training your people to ensure that they have the skills and the ability to perform the jobs that will come along with these projects so that you can guarantee that Baltimoreans are being hired. And no one's looking at that. Not to mention the fact that no one looks at environmental factors around anything, any type of development. The fact that Port Covington is on the sea level and the sea level is rising and quite frankly in 10 years could be underwater. No one's even looking at that. And is that a risk that we want to take with $660 million? We're going to have to spend more money to protect our investment. And so no one's having those conversations. No one's looking at long-term impact on any of these development approaches, and that has to be done.
Let's get to the phones here, and let's turn this over to our callers here at 410-319-8888. Marvin, you're up first. Daryl, you're up next. 410-319-8888. Marvin, welcome to the program. Hi, Marvin.
Marvin.
It says Marvin on my screen. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Marvin.
He just answered my question about Under Armour. I wanted to know what was his position on that deal with the city, that Under Armour deal.
Okay.
I think he answered what I wanted
okay.
to know.
All right, cool. Good. I'm glad he did.
All right, thank you so much for calling, Marvin.
Let's go to the next caller up, 410-319-8888. And Daryl, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Mark. Mr. Harris, a lot of us are really proud of you. You're very articulate. I think you're doing a great job in getting the Green Party or putting the Green Party on the map. In the event that you do not win the election, which of the remaining candidates would you find it easier to support?
You're not ready for that one, are you?
I'm not. No, it's not that I'm not ready for that. That's a great question. The reality is that I've played sports my whole life, and this is a team sport. And sometimes when you play against an opponent, you might beat them up on the court one day, and they might be on your team the next week. And so understanding that whoever is committed to moving Baltimore forward, and seriously though, that commitment has to be to people first. whoever's committed to people, not corporations, but to putting people of Baltimore first, because it's the people that make this city great, and it's the people that deserve to be invested in, and neighborhoods that have been forgotten about, neglected, and ignored. Whoever that person is, I am absolutely willing to work with them, no matter what their party affiliation is, no matter what their position is. I'm willing to work with them to make Baltimore better, because that's what my commitment is to the team, and the overall team in this case is Baltimore City, and we must win. And so I'm willing to work with anyone who's committed to putting people first. But what I will say is that usually the values of our candidates are reflected in their finance reports and who's been contributing to those campaign finances. And so that is often a reflection of what corporations they owe or they need to work for. So I'm excited to say that we've recently released our television commercials. We have radio spots that are running now. And that wasn't paid for by BG&E. It wasn't paid for by Under Armour. It was paid for by everyday Baltimoreans, $22 at a time, that made that happen, proving that when the masses decide that they have someone that they believe is going to represent their interests and going to represent people, that they, when they unite and work together and put their money behind them, that we can make great things happen.
How much have you raised?
I don't know. It's upwards of $40,000+.
But all just from donations, small donations.
Small donations.
410-319-8888. Come back to these calls coming in. Do join us for Joshua Harris. We're going to go back to Twitter, at Mark Steiner. Damon W. tweeted in, can you ask how he's going to help make city schools better for the future? Really critical question.
That is a critical question, and it is one of my top priorities. I tell people all the time, when you look at my literature, it's the number one thing on there. Being someone who's a former special education teacher's assistant and being in the classroom and understanding the dynamics of the classroom, last year I spoke at the Congressional Black Caucus Annual Legislative Conference about education disparities in African-American communities. Education is a priority of mine. Unfortunately, what we've seen is that the city hasn't valued education. We say that we value education, but we don't put any money into it. Knowing that Baltimore City only puts, I believe, 12% of its budget into education, and the total compilation, the state provides 70% of it and the city provides 30% of it, when surrounding counties put 30% of their actual budget into education.
And control the systems themselves inside their own communities.
Yes, and we have to begin to see that and put our money where our mouth is, because, again, we're talking about being proactive here and investing in creating healthy young people who can thrive and have the greatness inside of them drawn out. And so that usually means smaller classroom sizes. That usually means we need to hire more teachers. And that means shifting towards community school models, which means we have to have more staff that's on hand for public health issues, for mental health issues, for crisis situations, for job placement and resources, which means we need to have the money to pay for that. So again, in my public banking platform or my economic development platform, it comes back to how we pay for it. And so we need to have the resources necessary. And my economic development platform gives us the ability to take 40% of that interest earned from that public bank and put it directly into education to start with the infrastructure. And then we can move into smaller classrooms, and then we can move into curriculum augmentation and changing that. But that's what sets me aside from the other candidates. They're all going to tell you they want to make education better. They're all going to tell you they want to fix our vacant houses and our road problems and infrastructure problems. The difference between me and them is that I'm the only one to release a plan for how we pay for it. No one else has.
Talk about that for a moment. I wish we had more time, because I wanted to spend more time in education. And quick question, then get back right to the bank. In the time we have left. Do you want the city to take back control of the Board of Education and the schools in the city?
I do believe that the city needs to take control of it, but I also think that the administration of the city and the Harris administration would take responsibility for Baltimore City Schools. We know that since 1997, every person appointed to the school board has come from the mayor's office, and the governor's office has simply given a nod yes. And so there's been this finger pointing because no one wanted to take responsibility for it. The reality is it was the responsibility of the mayor's administration here in Baltimore City. And when we talk about education, it's not just K-12. Knowing that we just had the Schaefer Center release this report that specifically talked about the neglect, devaluing of Baltimore City Community College, which should be a institutional hub in Baltimore for those young people who do not go to college and who are looking for workforce training and placement to go to Baltimore City Community College. And yet on the state level, it's a state-funded institution. It has been neglected and underfunded and ignored. And yet we have my opponent, who sits as the Senate Majority Leader, who has said nothing about the funding of Baltimore City Community College, or it being built into the mayor's administration and being directly related to Baltimore City as a hub for the city, and making sure that our young people who come out of 12th grade can use Baltimore City Community College as a tool and a resource to be funneled directly into workforce. And that's something that has to change. If we value education and if we value our young people, we have to have folks who are going to be looking and actually investing in and advocating on behalf of the funding of education. And it's really disheartening what the Schaefer report said about the funding and how long it's been ignored and neglected, and that none of our legislators have said anything about it, including the Senate Majority Leader, my opponent.
So let's very quickly talk about this banking idea you have. I'm going to be able to get some clarity what you're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's pie in the sky you're talking about. How do you get this started? Talk about what this means and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, so public banking is a policy that gives us the ability to take control of our economic futures. And it's not something that I made up. It's been done and been successful in other places. What it really understands is that our city's budget is sitting in a bank on Wall Street, and that bank is getting rich off of our money like other banks do. They're investing in, they're making their CEOs and their investors wealthy. Because if we were all to go to the bank right now and take out our money, the bank would be screwed because it wouldn't be there because they're making investments with it, including our city's budget right now, which is sitting in the bank. And we don't see any returns on that interest that they're making off of it. So simply by taking our money away from a private banking institution and opening up a local Baltimore City public bank that will be managed and controlled by banking professionals, not by the city hall or by the mayor's office. I don't want my hands on it. I want banking professionals managing it. We would be able to leverage our guaranteed budget every year and make the same investments that they do on Wall Street through a private bank, but now all the interest earned comes back to the city and back to the citizens of Baltimore.
If it's so easy, why hasn't it been done? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's you make it sound very simple.
The reason it hasn't been done in Baltimore is you have folks who are more concerned about their next election than they are about the next generation. And so no one's been looking at policy that has worked in other places and what we can do to really control our economic futures here in Baltimore. They all get in office and they do what's just been done because this is the way that it works. I'm someone who is truly committed to progressive policy reform. And so that's also what separates me from the other candidates. I'm bringing new ideas that no one else is talking about, yet they've been done in other places. I'm bringing new ideas to the table that we can implement here and use to make great strides towards stabilizing our local economies, towards job creation, towards increasing home ownership, towards increasing entrepreneurship and small business ownership.
So very quickly, in a few minutes we have left, so how would that affect unemployment in the inner cities of this community, which may be the majority of the city, and redeveloping housing and community? How does that fit into that?
Well, absolutely. So one of the things is that we know that the city has 16,000 owned vacant properties that the city owns that need to be rehabbed and renovated. And so one of the things that we could do and that I've consistently advocated on, including in the last two TIFs that have been given out, is to start a training center with those that interest earned. We can start a training center that trains our Baltimoreans in construction, green jobs, and hospitality, the three fastest growing and largest industries in Baltimore City, and jobs that exist right now that are going to people in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Delaware, and the county. And that has to change. Because developers come back to us and they say, oh, well, you don't have the skilled workforce to do this, so we got to hire people from other places. If we as a city have a people-first approach, and we are committed to investing in people, and we invest in training our citizens to do that work, we can eliminate that excuse because we can say we know we have the skilled workforce because we've put our money up to make sure that they're trained and that they have the ability to perform these jobs. So now we'd like you to hire people from Baltimore City, and we can put measures in place to ensure that that's happening. And that all comes back to money again, needing the money to establish
the school. What does that money come from?
Well, the money comes from the interest. Even if we piloted our Baltimore City Public Bank with our rainy day fund, which is $98 million that literally just sits in a bank account just in case something happens, and in most cases, nothing ever happens. If we just took that and we opened up a Baltimore City Public Bank to pilot it, the interest we could earn in the first 6 months off of $98 million is tremendous. We could do tremendous things. We could earn millions of dollars and begin to put them back into Baltimore City, whether it be establishing the school to train people in the jobs and the skills necessary, or whether it be putting into education.
We have 2 minutes. Let me get a quick call here. Luis, you're on the air. Les, we have 2 minutes left. So what's your question? Luis?
Can you hear me?
We have 2 minutes. Go right ahead.
Okay. I wanted to ask about you being for the people. And as we know, most of the people were against the Port Covington deal. Are you willing to repeal the Port Covington deal?
Interesting question.
And that also has an effect on our education budget.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So that's something that has gone unaddressed. And I sat in the first mayoral debate or forum, and my opponent said that there's lessons to be learned from Port Covington. We cannot afford to lose $50 million in education. That's not a lesson that we learn here in Baltimore City. That's something that has to be evaluated on the front end, and we have to make sure that we're not putting our children in the place to be the scapegoat for decisions we made for big business. So, yes, I'm interested in repealing it or amending the legislation, because it is legislation that can be changed or overturned. And in these last few days, if you are out there and you support me and you believe that Baltimore can work for all of us, we need your help. I can't do this by myself. On Election Day, we have 292 polling locations where we need volunteers at.
How do they get in touch with you?
You can call us at 410-777-8531 and tell them that you'd like to volunteer on our campaign and help get someone in office who's truly committed to people first. You can email us or send us a Facebook message. We are not hard to find. HarrisForBaltimore.com.
Josh Harris, thanks for coming by. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Mark. And make sure you get out to the polls on Tuesday.
I've voted already.
All right.
4.5 days to voting time. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our research producer is Calvin Perry. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. The podcast is Steiner Show. Share it with your friends. Visit us on the web or use your favorite podcasting app. And reminding the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to all the questions you have about education, Maryland students, parents, and schools, visit the MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. And for your source for cool jazz and more, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Have a great day. And vote on Tuesday.